I'm Morgan Elkins, and the piece that I'm going to be reading is called Cold House, and it's a memoir that I wrote. Leaning against the blue pantry door, wooden ridges digging into my spine, I fiddled with my laptop. Double-clicked Safari and waited for the comforting sight of Pandora Radio to flood my screen. My fingers twitched, pressing the volume until all 16 gray boxes were filled with white and my headphones were ringing with static. The Rolling Stones and Modest Mouse clouded over my eyes, and I let out a breath I hadn't known I had been holding. The air was cold and stiff. I stared at the floor. A spider crawled across the slate tiles, dipping into a crack like a trench. I waited for it to reappear, but all that seemed to happen was the cobwebs holding me quiet crept and grew. I turned my head. Parker sat with his back to me, bent over a novel. He seemed lost in his own world until his shoulders hunched when their voices raised. You hear in stories how, when parents fought, their voices grew lower and lower, and that was what scared the kids the most. How serious discussions meant ears pressed to closed doors and whispered breaths. I can't imagine why anyone would ever try to hear. My aunt and uncle's house was built with arching beams and murmur-thin walls. My brothers shook with their voices' vibrations, and I knew that I had to do something. As I watched, his silhouette turned and his eyes met mine. Watching Pirates of the Caribbean together wasn't the best plan I'd ever devised. The on-screen laughter did nothing to mask the walls of the cold house where I crouched, trying to block the sound of them and shove the psych wards and medical bills and identity theft into a cardboard box and burn it. Praying like crazy to find a pirate who would stab the shadows and fight the monster under his bed so he could close his eyes and maybe get some sleep at night. Swords clashed and sparks of metal flew off the screen and landed in my brother's hair. I watched him as he watched the actors pretending some fairy tale like everything would work out. With one earbud hidden behind my hair and the other snaking to Parker, I wasn't deaf anymore. I didn't feel safe, didn't feel empty. I could hear them as they whispered words like curses. Penn Bay, Maine Medical, Boston. Locked up, tucked away, institutionalized. Better for everyone. So I turned my face away and pressed my fist against my empty ear and pretended to prop my head as I tried not to hear. Parker's eyes lit up and shone as Johnny Depp lunged, shifting his sword into flesh. He mouthed the words that he knew by then by heart. We watched the film again and again until my back ached from sitting too long and my feet and hands and brain were frozen. Their voices never faded. And when Parker looked over at me, so many scenes later, I realized the sparks hidden in his eyes were tears. He whispered, "Is it going to be okay, Morgan?" And I didn't know what to tell him. I squeezed his hand. He let me hold it for a beat longer than he normally would have. Then he slipped it from my palm, turning back to the movie resting on our knees. I bit my tongue, wishing he didn't hear them. Wishing I could give him a reason to pretend to act his age. My little brother didn't need to know this, didn't need to hear the harsh, bleak details of mental illness, didn't need to listen to them through paper-thin walls, hear his mother cry and his uncle's voice shake and deny. I don't know what I could have done. It wasn't like there was sanctuary anywhere. For months, we drifted around our house with iPods welded to our hands, earphones melted to skin. Distant satellites colliding in the bathroom in the mornings to splash water on our faces, drag a brush through our hair, go to school and pretend like everything was fine. Sometimes at night, floating between dreams, I would rewrite my life so everything worked out favorably. Like it was a card game and all I had to do was stack the deck right. My mind drifted shut, filling in the leftover holes with halves of memories. Fears I can't remember happening or not filled my subconscious. It's March. The wind chimes sing. I bite into my chicken teriyaki sandwich. We pull into the driveway. Mum's face is hard, lined with mascara like armor she isn't used to wearing. I wait for her to tell us to stay in the car, but she forgets. I feel Parker's eyes in the rearview mirror. It is silent. Her seatbelt clicks metallically, then thuds against the seat. She grips the door handle with white knuckles, pushes it open. Stands, smooths down her skirt, strides forward with purpose. Wind screams from the open car door she forgot to close. I reach for my buckle and then I'm floating to the porch and Parker's beside me. We freeze at the glass door, watching the scene in the cold house play in slow motion. Too late, I grab my brother's arm, fingernails clawing into his shoulder. He winces, but lets me steer him around, pulling on his arm. His hand is in mine, and we're running away, past the apple trees, the well, the garden shed. The pond smears my vision, ice crackling and chasing us as we skid across. The wind whips at my hair, and I'm blinded. It weaves between our hands until my fingers clutch only air, and I scream once, shrill in the cold air. Frost creeps down my throat, and I'm still running through the backfield where the yellow grass is waist-high and frail. A raven swoops overhead, low and dangerous. I trip, the ground flying from under my feet. Figures quiver in the white sky as I lay on my back in the brittle grass, and I reach my arm out to meet them. Mum's hair is white, jarring against the cloudless sky. She flickers, her fingers straining to brush mine, and dissolves into how I last saw her. She crouches over a body. Her arm is around her sister, who is rocking herself and moaning. Mum's pale blue eyes stare unblinking, searing through the glass to meet my gaze. Go, her eyes implore me. Now. I reach to grab Parker's arm, but my hand rockets into empty air. I see him then, sitting in a high-backed rocking chair, his knees tucked to his chest. He's watching the body on the ground and mouthing something. I squint at him and see the note that he clutches. My eyes dart from the body on the ground to the apology in the back of the envelope and back to my uncle. To the bloodstains carpeting my aunt's dress and the floor, and the tears pouring down her face. For the most part, they sit. Quiet. No one is screaming, no one is calling 911. I try to ask why, yell, what is happening? But my voice cannot break the barrier of the door. They all sit, grieving, but accepting. Like they know that there is nothing left they can do. The scene flickers, and I'm lying in the meadow again. Morgan? Sweet Pea, where are you? I'm here, I think, loud as if I had shouted. Clouds roll overhead, and I'm plunged into darkness. My eyes strain. I'm here! A lantern bobs in the distance. Sweet Pea, we're coming. Slowly they emerge, just silhouettes on the horizon. My uncle is in the front, holding the light so it shines off his glasses and glints in his eyes. Sweet Pea, he calls. Behind him, my aunt floats, my mother's hand resting on her shoulder, steering her. My brother trails at their heels as if following their wake, dazed. I push against the ground and stand, flying to meet them. Sweet Pea, we're here, my uncle says, always here for you. I try to speak. There is something that I must remember, some reason that his voice and his presence seem so profound. I strain through my memory and try to recall it, but I can't. There's only a hole where a cold house once stood. Everything is going to be better now. Everything's going to be all right, my uncle croons. I always wake up as our silhouettes smile.